Welcome to Ed Show 94. Today, we are six shows away from hitting the magic 100.
Congratulations, you just passed the math test.
Absolutely, woohoo! I did that in my head just before we came on air. I just thought it was a nice idea.
He's S-M-R-T.
I am S-M-R-T, or S-I-M-O-N.
Oh, that works too.
Yeah, that works too. Okay, so coming a little bit later on, we have an interview with Adam Hall, who's one of the TPMs, Technical Product Managers, inside of our Cloud and Enterprise group. Really interesting interview.
Are you going to have translation services available for the UK accent and the Australian accent, I think it is?
No, he's a Kiwi.
Is he a Kiwi?
Yeah, he's a Kiwi.
Don't want to upset people. He's not Australian.
He's not Australian.
He's Kiwi.
He's Kiwi. Yeah. Adman NZ on Twitter. That's what gave it away for me.
Nice.
I was also slightly confused. But we're bringing the whole thing of the Commonwealth into the Ed Show on a continuous basis.
International.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to get an American on very soon, I think. So that's coming up a little bit later on. We're going to be having a look at hybrid identity inside of that. But before we do, we need to talk about what is new this week. And the first of those is the Office Graph, codename Oslo.
I heard about this. This was something that seemed rather interesting at the time. But this was done in the Office Garage blog that they talked about, Mr. Chapman,
yeah.
I do believe.
Yep, it was. They started talking about Office Graph and around Oslo and what it actually is. It's kind of neat. I like this idea. It starts to bring together the idea of a social graph inside of your office, inside of your organization.
Yeah.
So I know you through work, obviously, and we obviously work on a few documents together.
Yeah.
We go to the same kind of meetings. We interact with the same kinds of people.
We have the same access, the same SharePoints, that sort of stuff too, I'm assuming.
Yep, totally. We have access to all the same kind of things. And what Oslo actually starts to do is to bring that together for you. So it'll start to prioritize information. It'll start to say, you're about to go to a meeting. These are the emails in your inbox which are important for that meeting that you're about to go to. These are the documents that people are talking about for the meeting that you're about to go to. And it starts to help you navigate the world in that slightly more engaging way and brings that kind of social aspect right into your organization.
That's kind of cool. And it's not a released product yet, right? It's still...
No, they're still talking about it in the kind of early stages, but it's on the Office blog. Links are down in the show notes at the bottom. But yeah, kind of a nice, cool idea to start to help you surface some of that information.
I'm obviously a big fan of Twitter and being able to take a look at a lot of different context of things in that way. And I actually like the format, the way that looks. Obviously, it's not Twitter, but the fact that it has a nice flow of stuff that brings these relationships together you normally wouldn't notice seems to be quite good.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. Are you on the internal access to that?
Not yet. Kind of hoping.
I think we shall apply.
Yeah, I think we'll be putting in our applications. The next one that I wanted to bring up, Secure Development Lifecycle.
Three old dudes on a web page.
Yeah, three old dudes on a web page. Actually, the web page is really cool. Again, in the show notes, but we'll start to scroll it through. It's one of these story websites that we've started to turn out from the news channel. And it kind of takes you through how we've moved to this world of developing secure software, moving to the secure development lifecycle.
And this is an extension of what was developed out of the common engineering criteria back with trustworthy computing, I think about 11 or 12 years ago, wasn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. So we've been working on this since kind of 2001 is when this kind of kicked off.
Code Red.
Yeah,
nice.
That was fun. I'm trying to think what I was doing for Code Red. Oh yeah, cleaning up viruses. Yeah, that was mainly what I was doing for that year. Yes, it's kind of nice. Nice way of going through the story, and actually starts to take us through into explaining some of what we do inside of SDL inside of Microsoft. A little bit further down here, when we get through to chapter 3, it starts to explain the requirements, take us through what happens at each different stage of building through the seven phases of the SDL.
Now, that's actually really kind of cool, because what they do is they have we make the SDL available as a practice for anyone to be able to use if you're doing software development, and we've been using this for a while now. So it's actually kind of cool how we're contributing back to the whole development lifecycle of things, that anyone can use this new concept of, well, not new anymore, but the secure concept of developing software.
Yeah.
It's almost like being the largest software development company in the world, we kind of know what we're doing, and we're sharing information back with people.
Yeah, who'd have thought we'd do that? That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Nice.
So great story. Really good, nice thing to browse through in a lunch hour.
Now,
and then finally,
this next one, I love this one here. I think I use this one on the Ping Show, and I use this a lot. But if you had a dog when XP came out, that dog would be dead now.
That's sad.
It is sad, but
that's
so
really
true.
Sad.
Like, it's old, people. We've been talking about getting off of XP for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And there's actually a website.
There is actually a website, yeah. 26 days, apparently, from this point in time right now. It's probably going to be 25 or 24. The maths went there, didn't it? 25 or 24 by the time folks actually get to see the video. But yeah, the days are counting down. One more Patch Tuesday.
So where are we going to be when this clock expires is what I want to know. Are we going to be at a bar someplace with a couple of pints?
That sounds like a good plan. We should do that. We should definitely do that. We could, of course.
I was interacting with a friend of mine online, Aiden Finn, Joe Elway, as his Twitter handle happens to say. He was talking about the various different implementations of XP, including a lot of bank machines. And I just jokingly said, so do you think that on the bank machine that's still running XP, you're going to get the nag that comes up that was just deployed at the beginning of the month to remind people that XP expires in 30 days? What do you think?
Well, I think most of those are running embedded, and there's a little bit longer to run on that. But, you know, having formerly worked for a bank, it would be kind of an annoying customer experience to have a little pop-up appear in the middle.
Although, I'm touching the screen, I can't dismiss it.
Yeah, go away, there's no button. Anyway, yeah, that would be kind of hard. We are on about the Windows XP thing a lot, but it is kind of important. The patches are going to stop in a month's time. On the website itself, down at the bottom, there's a bunch of resources. Some of them are really cool. There's actually links to deployment jumpstarts, various things which are actually ongoing. Right as we speak now, there's a deployment jumpstart being run to help people get lots of skills in order to be able to move up to newer versions of Windows.
And even for consumers that are in XP, if you happen to be supporting any of your aunts, uncles, brothers-in-laws, that sort of stuff, we are making software available for free to be able to move their data off of the system to something else for a nice new system. And we've partnered even with Laplink to be able to go through and to do fancy transfers between two cables, between two systems. But generally speaking, you should definitely move. Now, I got this question online from somebody. Is it still okay to run XP inside of a VM isolated from everything else on your system in case you need it for something? What would you say to that?
My response to that would be no. But that's purely because, I mean, the reality is some people are going to need to keep that around for testing for a little bit of time. But you can never be too sure. You don't want to have those kind of things hanging around in your environment for too long. Mm-hmm. It's good to get rid of them. Good to get rid of the unsupported software as soon as you can do. It's just good practice.
I've got some friends that work in the manufacturing industry, and they actually have systems that are running like high-speed laser drills and water stuff and things like that, and ovens that bake circuit boards, things like that. And they're running off of XP to be able to go off and control them with the PC controller. It's literally a PC. And they said, I'm just going to disconnect from the network, and it'll be fine. It's like, well, what happens if someone walks over there and they happen to put their design drawings on the oven or do an update or something like that, and it's on a USB stick, and the USB stick is infected? Not going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be bad, certainly.
Please, do your best. Eradicate, move, get off to something more recent. It is disappearing, going away, no longer in support. And before you ask, there are no more extensions. It's already been extended far too long. Go check out some of those resources on the page, for sure.
Yeah. And one of the reasons is that, you know, new devices do different things in very different ways. Coming up in the interview section in a second, we're going to have a look at ways to start to think about things like identity differently. As we start to get these devices that sit in our pockets all the time, that stay connected to the internet all the time, we need to be able to think about identity slightly differently, because we might not always have access back to our on-premises network. We might need access to something else, maybe something in the cloud. So in a second, Adam is going to join me to talk about hybrid identity inside of Windows Azure AD and linking up your on-prem Active Directory as well.
Cool.
Welcome to The Edge Show. Today, we're going to be having a look at all things identity. It's one of the things that I've found really interesting for the past few years of my career is thinking about how does identity work for organizations. People inside of organizations need to have some form of identity, as do devices. We need to make sure that when somebody logs onto a device, they're actually able to access the data, the services, the resources that they're supposed to. Things are starting to change, though. The world is moving forward, and we're seeing that people are carrying devices in their pocket. I've got a phone here. What does the identity that I use on this device look like? And how do I get access to that identity wherever I am, anywhere in the world, using my phone? Joining me on the interview today is Adam Hall from our cloud and enterprise team to kind of help explain how identity works in this new modern world. what would you call the kind of elevator pitch? You've got 2 minutes in a lift with a CIO.
Sure.
What would you say about hybrid identity?
So I think when I look at the Microsoft approach to identity, we've come from a rich ecosystem around NT4, Active Directory. We have a very large portion of our population and customers using Active Directory today. And what I would say is we're taking that existing investment that our customers have made and bridging that out to the cloud. As they move from just on-premises style authentication around known entities, and as they start to consume things like cloud services, Office 365 and so on, we want to give our customers one user identity for each user across all the resources they need to access, no matter where they are, and making sure that IT and the business stay in control of all those corporate assets. And that's ultimately what we're trying to deliver with hybrid identity.
So the numbers are kind of huge, really. I think there's something like 95% of all Fortune 100 companies, 500 companies, probably the same, actually have Active Directory in place. And I guess that virtually every single person that's watching is using Active Directory somewhere within their organization, if not as the main identity store.
That's right.
One of the things we started to see, though, over the past few years is that identities have started to become more fractured. Mm-hmm. We've started to see lots of different stores of identity. Some are in the cloud, some are on-prem, sometimes there's a system for HR, sometimes it's not very well integrated. We've got some levers that can be pulled to try and make those things come together a little bit.
Absolutely. So I think fracture is a good way of thinking about it, because you have fracturing on-premise, where you have things like SAP, Oracle, SQL databases, Lotus Notes, as well as Active Directory, mm-hmm. line of business applications. Some are integrated with AD, some are not.
Yeah.
And so therefore, customers are already dealing on-premise with users getting single sign-on and self-service experiences is hard. And we've had products like MIIS, Forefront Identity Manager, and so on premise that we continue to invest in to make that element easy. It really fractures very hard when you bring the cloud into it. And all of a sudden you're going from, hey, I've got this known thing here that I own and control, to I'm consuming a cloud service where all you've got is a log on to the service and that's the last you see of it. How do you take your known user identity, I'm adhall@microsoft.com, how do I log on to a cloud service with that when Active Directory is on-prem in my data center? And so what we want to do is enable our customers to take that identity and bridge it out to the cloud and get that single sign-on. And that's really what we're trying to achieve there. And we've got a few different ways of doing it as they come together. Now, when you go to the cloud, there are additional things to think about. Users are on typically internet-connected devices. Mm-hmm. They may or may not even be domain-joined. They could be cross-platform.
Absolutely.
And so how do you do single sign-on and single user identity across platforms and across locations like cloud versus data center? And those are the challenges that we're taking on to help our customers do that easily and in an affordable way as well.
I guess before we dive into the how, which we'll do in a minute, is kind of worth thinking, just why does it become important? I think for me, I've seen this happen in countless organizations where I've worked. Basically, you end up with lots of different calls going into the help desk. Can you reset my password for the AS400s? Can you reset my password for the ancient Novell system that I need to log into? Can you reset my password for, and that just creates churn for a help desk.
Yes.
But then there's the other side of it, which is when people start to have lots of different identities, they start to lose control of them very quickly.
Yep.
And they start to write passwords down and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that end user experience of how many passwords do I have to remember, and most users, when we go and talk to customers, they are happy remembering one hard password than remembering 10 easier passwords. If you just give them one thing to remember, they're okay with having a higher level of difficulty to get through that. We're bringing in things like conditional access and multi-factor authentication as well. So you can say, hey, it's just one logon, but we might ask you to do a couple of extra things in order to get access to something. Think about the difference between a user accessing an intranet site versus an HR system. One has generic information where the risk factor is relatively low. Like, what would happen if that information got out? Not much. What would happen if your HR information was released on the internet? Government IDs, home addresses and phone numbers, sensitive information that really, I don't want that information out there, right? And so doing that from the end user experience is all about making it easy for you, Simon, to log on to everything you need. One password, maybe additional challenges and a PIN code, and that's it. IT and the business, though, are looking at the risk profile, and they're saying, what happens if this device gets lost or stolen? What information is on that device? And how do I know that when you log on from any device, it's actually you and not someone that's stolen the device and managed to hack the password out of it or something like that? And so they're really looking at it from a risk profile point of view. How do we reduce the risk and yet still make you productive as a user? And that's the balance of those two sides as they come together.
So let's draw it around and look at some of the tools that we've got out there, the Microsoft tooling to try and help with the whole identity piece. Obviously, there's AD on-prem.
Yep. We start with Active Directory. That's, as you say, there's a very high percentage in the 90s of customers that use Active Directory as their primary authentication source for what I would consider traditional IT. Then we have things like federation services and synchronization technologies, which are about bridging out to the cloud. And we'll get into that when we draw some diagrams around what the differences are between synchronization of identity and identity federation. Yeah. On-premise, we have Forefront Identity Manager today. We are rebranding that, and we'll have another major version of that with more information coming very soon. And then in the cloud, we have Azure Active Directory Premium. Or Azure Active Directory, and there's a premium SKU to that as well. And that's all about the cloud identities. Things like Office 365, Windows Intune, and Dynamics CRM all run on Azure Active Directory. So if you're an Office 365 user and you log on to Office 365, you are already logging on to Azure Active Directory, whether you knew that or not.
Yeah, and we do something crazy, don't we? Like a couple of billion transactions every...
12 billion authentications per week is what we're putting through Azure Active Directory at the moment. It's an incredibly big platform. Yeah. It's not just domain controllers in the cloud. This is a cloud service platform for identity and access management.
I find that just incredible that we can actually deal with that on a regular basis. And you know, it's not just that our cloud services can happily run your Xbox Titanfall stuff. They can actually happily run a really serious workload, like logons to people's email, logons to people's communications, all of that stuff on a
sharing of documents
basis.
Between users, you know, all the sharing and collaboration functionality that's in Office 365. When I say, hey, Simon, you can access my document, all of those authentications go through that platform.
Yeah.
And so when you bring together the on-premise scenarios as well as the cloud scenarios and then bridge them together, we really can give a single identity for on-prem, in the cloud, and then out to SaaS applications as well. Azure AD has a catalog of some 850 applications as of today, where we can provide single sign-on to from corporate identities.
I think there's a really important point on that as well. And one thing that people say have thrown up in conversation with me around this is 850 applications, that's great. They're all Microsoft applications. And the answer there is we don't have 850.
We don't have 850 applications.
So they're not just Microsoft applications. There's third parties. Some of our fiercest competitors are actually inside of our environment, because we can do the authentication there. They've got an API which is public, which we can leverage and build that kind of heavy lifting.
Absolutely.
For people to be able to use.
Absolutely. So how about we draw some of this out and show the audience as to how this actually comes together? Because hearing about this sounds like great, but how do I, as an IT pro, as someone who like looks after identity, how do I get my head around like what is this thing and what's actually in place?
Yeah.
How about we do some drawing?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right.
That's a good plan.
So we start with a scenario where we're on-premise. This is where everybody knows. So let's start with our Active Directory down here, and we'll see how good my my drawing skills are here. All right, let me give a pen. Okay, if we start with AD down here, this is where we are today. We might have a number of different repositories come in here. These may be different line of business applications. These could be other identity realms. And so on-premise, this is where the Forefront scenarios come in. We can do synchronization of identity, of passwords. We can do things like self-service around things like password reset, group management, and so on. I can create a distribution list and people can opt into it. I can control access to that, and so on. So all of these capabilities we have on-premise today. If we go out to the cloud and we look at Azure Active Directory up here, this is where we're starting to say, well, we want to connect out to, say, Office 365. And excuse my horrible writing on the OneNote here, but this is where we get into cloud services. Yeah. Office 365, Windows Intune, and, that's not going to come out particularly well. Let me just undo that.
I think this is one of the interesting things. When I was starting to play around and start to get used to using my Office 365 tenant, using my Windows Intune tenant, and also using my Windows Azure tenant, I actually found that I could start to go into the Windows Azure management portal and bring all of those identities back together and start to gain central management over it, which is what everybody really wants out there.
Correct. So if we've got our Azure Active Directory up there, we've got Office 365 and SaaS applications, we've got AD and all our line of business apps on-prem, we do two things here. The first is what I would consider sync. Now, synchronization is exactly what it sounds like. I'm taking things that are here and I'm making them equivalent over here.
Yeah.
This is something we've had in market for a while with things like DirSync, the directory synchronization tool. Anyone who uses Office 365 knows all about DirSync.
Yeah.
And this takes literally attributes of a user in Active Directory and populates them up to Azure Active Directory. Things like your name, email address, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, we have an option there with password sync. Yep. And this is a very misunderstood thing.
Yeah.
We don't synchronize the password. We take the hash out of Active Directory, we hash it again, synchronize that up to Azure Active Directory. And so really it's a hash of a hash.
Yeah, so it's a pretty secure way of doing it to make sure
that's going to work. It's a very secure way of doing it. What that provides is you can do single sign-on with password hash sync. And the way that works is if I connect to AD, it will look up AD and say, what's the password, and do the validation. If it connects to, say, something like Office 365, it will check against the cloud Active Directory and say, is the password correct? And so sync enables one of two things. Either it's a precursor to federation, or it provides single sign-on if you do the password hash sync. Now, the reality is, right now today, not many customers feel confident putting their passwords in the cloud. For whatever reason. Mm-hmm. That could be fear, that could be a regulatory compliance, that could be a business policy. There's many reasons why. If you don't want to put your password in the cloud, we still provide single sign-on by doing what's called federation. And federation is where we have a second bridge back down, and that allows us to pass attribute the password requirement back down on-prem. In the case of federation, when I log on to Office 365 and you type your username, what it's going to do is redirect down to your on-premise Active Directory and validate you there. Now, we can do things like conditional access, we can do things like multi-factor authentication and additional levels of validation, but ultimately the difference between sync and federation is where does the authentication take place? Is it in the cloud? Is it coming back down on-prem? Ultimately, that's the decision point.
So even if you, just to dive into the ADFS, the Active Directory Federation for a second there,
yep.
Even if you've deployed all of your servers on-prem, and say I'm going to go off and talk to Office 365. Mm-hmm. Office 365 says to your client, you need to go and authenticate with the on-premises ADFS environment, and the address for that is here.
That's right.
And then the client actually makes another connection back to your ADFS environment. It's not Office 365 connecting to ADFS, which is kind of an important thing from a security point of view. If you're putting the cloud identity out there, that might be something that becomes really important.
Correct.
And I guess this kind of has come of age a little bit more with Server 2012 R2.
Correct.
And the product set in there. So
absolutely.
The introduction of the web application proxy role and also ADFS makes it pretty easy to
roll
out ADFS.
And we continue to invest in this space in terms of we have new synchronization technologies coming into preview. They'll be GA by June, which are going to take the synchronization engine of DirSync and add more capabilities. So things like being able to synchronize these line of business applications on the left-hand side, syncing those directly to the cloud. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to take things like Oracle, SAP, Lotus Notes, LDAP databases, and synchronize those directly to Azure AD for cloud sign-on. So we're going to be able to do things like that. We're investing in tools to make the deployment of the synchronization and federation capabilities a lot easier. And so we're going to have a new tool coming out of the near future, which is going to do that for you. You'll go through a wizard, you'll answer a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. Where do I want my passwords stored? What does my environment look like? Step through the wizard. At the end of that, it will deploy the correct synchronization technology for you and configure it, and it will deploy ADFS in its correct configuration as well. And so we're really making that onboarding to cloud services a lot easier for customers. We can do things like branding as well. I mean, we can do a quick demo if you want where we see what that looks like, try and hit a cloud service and redirect back down on-premise, and you can actually brand that up and make it look like your corporate site. You're logging on to a cloud service but redirecting down to a known entity. And so you can apply different policies to that. Things like workplace join, device registration, multi-factor authentication, this ability to say, it's great, Simon, you want to log on, but there's a few more rules that are going to be required in order for you to do this.
Yeah, I think
that's taking that through.
It's an interesting thing there. The branding side of ADFS and actually also using Azure AD Premium as well.
Yes.
The same, very similar branding guidelines there. But that's actually kind of an important thing. IT guys tend to forget about this little aspect, but we've done it really well internally.
Yep.
When you go to the Microsoft ADFS portals or anything that refers you through to it, it looks very much like a Microsoft site.
Yeah.
That visual identity, that visual branding tells you, actually I'm part way to knowing that this is something that should be trusted.
Correct.
There's other cues that you should be looking for there, but it starts to give you that little cue.
Correct.
And I think that's kind of an important thing. We kind of do these ADFS rollouts and people kind of forget about it.
Yeah, and things like the end user experiences are important, especially when you look at self-service password reset and group management and so on. We're going to be able to do that in Azure AD out in the cloud. And so changing your password out in the cloud and synchronizing back down on premise. These kind of experiences where you're removing calls to the help desk, which reduces overhead from a user point of view and reduces cost from a business point of view as well. So I think password reset, typically password reset costs about $25 for the average customer.
Yeah.
If you can make that a self-service experience, then you know services like this pay for themselves very quickly. You need one password reset per user per year, and basically you paid for the service where that's only one out of 10 things that it does.
Yeah.
And so you know making it easier for the user, reducing cost out of the business, those are things that we can do with cloud services in a very easy way.
So what else do we need to know in order to be able to put these things in place? And what else can Azure AD Premium give us to help around this?
So Azure AD Premium is bringing in a number of identity and access management things. The self-service password reset we've talked about, the group management we've talked about. We're going to be able to do more synchronization kind of technologies. And really the SaaS application sign-on is a big one as well. Mm-hmm. Giving users a place to go to get access to all of their SaaS applications. So they can go to there, they can click on nice big buttons that looks visually appealing from a user point of view on a touch kind of way. Bringing in multi-factor authentication, bringing in things like rights management in the cloud. Where we move from protecting documents only on Windows and Office to protecting them on all platforms and all document types. Bringing in things like cloud management and being able to say, and this is looking out a bit and forecasting, but it's really saying when you want access to something, maybe you need to have good management structures around that as well. And so Simon walks in, he has his tablet, he wants to work, we have policy on that, we have rules, we have regulations, we can check the status of the device, all that kind of thing. If you meet all those requirements, then you get through. And applying different policies on a per application basis so that you can separate the intranet from the HR web kind of thing.
Yeah.
You don't want to put someone through all of those hoops just to get to a generic information website.
Yeah.
But getting to sensitive information like business policies and product plans and HR kind of information, you probably want some additional authentication there. And so Azure AD Premium is about taking what used to be a big implementation on-premise with a lot of project work and took months to do to just subscribing to a service, connecting it up in the ways that we've just talked about, and it just works. And that's really what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it is really nice to be able to see it. When you can sign into the portal and you can go, I want to connect to my Twitter account. Okay, that doesn't require a lot. I need to go to Office 365. Actually, you're going to go to a SharePoint site and you've got to go through MFA. You need to have two factors of auth in order to get through it. It's actually a really clean way of being able to do it.
This single sign-on aspect is a great productivity overhead. I can authenticate once, and from that point forward, with things like device registration, we can provide single sign-on for longer periods of time. You know, it's all administrator controlled, so at any point in time, they can block that access.
Yep.
If something goes wrong, and a user can say, hey, I've lost my device, and we can block it. But from that point forward, you get single sign-on to Office 365, those other SaaS apps, and other enterprise apps as well. And so from a productivity point of view, it just makes it really easy for a user to get their job done.
Cool. Any particular links to resources that you reckon the guys out there should take a look at?
I think taking a look at Microsoft.com/PCIT, that's where all of the information about this is. There's loads of information on WindowsAzure.com. There is an identity and access management subsection there where you can learn all about the Azure AD and Azure AD Premium that's available today. And also take a look at the Azure blog site as well. There's a load of information from Alex Simons in particular, who's the director of PM for Azure AD, a prolific blogger and always getting that information out there. So you can always see what's going on his blog.
Awesome. I think the other one as well is the Brad Anderson blog, the In the Cloud blog. Go and have a look for that. He's actually posted a really nice post about hybrid identity as part of his hybrid cloud series that has a bunch of links to lots of different Active Directory and Azure AD documentation in there as well. So a great single place and a single resource as well as the WAC PCIT resource. Adam, thank you very much for joining us today for this, and we'll hand back to the guys back in the studio, which is the same studio that we're in at the moment. You know, one of the things that I need to do is end those interviews much better than I currently am doing. That was a terrible, terrible ending. I really have to apologize about the ending for that video.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. Anyway.
It's all right. He's new. He's in his beta phase.
I'm just getting there. Yeah, we're just going through the updates at the moment. We're trying to get there. So, obviously, hopefully you enjoyed that, and hopefully you enjoyed the news, and you continue to enjoy the show. Please give us feedback.
Yeah.
We thrive on it.
Right down below in the comments section on the post, go ahead and leave us some notes and some ideas of what you'd like to see in the show, what you thought of this particular show. Could you understand Adam and understand Simon with their thick accents that are in place or not? Let us know. You can also reach out to us the old-fashioned way by email at edge@microsoft.com.
Or you can do the Twitters, at Edge Show, the
no,
Edge Show.
No, it's actually at TN Edge.
Oh, TN Edge, okay.
TN Edge.
TN Edge.
On the Twitters, Facebook page as well, the Edge Show on Facebook. And hey, we also have a Windows 8 app you can go and download from the Windows App Store.
Yep.
It's out there too. But hey, thanks a lot for coming around for the episode, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.